coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody. Hello, hello. Chris Jordan here, coming at you from Austin, Texas. Hope everybody is doing well tonight. Hope everybody is doing okay. Godspeed to those who tried to visit the Titanic. It was discovered, actually, that the U.S. Navy had heard the implosion on their hydrophones the day that it happened. Interesting how the news cycle just kind of kept on pushing and pushing and pushing and talking about the idea of oxygen running out, things like that, as trials happened, attempts of hearings happened, all kinds of things during that time that we didn't really hear a whole lot about. But as always, things are crazy in the world. We are at a roiling point and beyond a boiling point since we had Steve Bassett on a couple weeks ago, talking about the UFO disclosure, the whistleblower David Grusch. There have apparently been almost two handfuls of additional whistleblowers to come forward. I just spent the afternoon watching the House panel, or the House hearing rather, and briefing that happened prior to the Arrow visit to the NASA panel. And that was very revealing and fantastic. I highly recommend everybody go and watch that. We, of course, shared that on our group. So speaking of which, everybody, let's go ahead and start off the evening with a little bit of news. Let's hop on by the Curious Realm group on Facebook. That is where you can follow us. That's where you can find us, folks. You can, of course, follow the page. That'll give you all updates for the show. That'll give you all guest updates, all live event updates, everything. But if you join the group, that's where you get all the news articles. That's where you get the conversation with everybody. Over 1,000 members there. Some of the news that we have posted this week at afiz.org. No simple answer for why people believe in conspiracy theories, says new study. It's interesting because, as we said on the show numerous times, people believe because they believe. There is no quantifiable reason for belief in anything. And so, anyway, out of webtelescope.org, this is exciting, actually. Webb makes first detection of crucial carbon molecule. These are the interstellar carbon molecules that make interstellar biochemistry and chemistry possible. Really interesting stuff there out of webtelescope.org. Out of theguardian.com, Pompeii fresco find possibly depicts 2,000-year-old form of pizza. That is pretty remarkable right there, because it literally just looks like a margherita pizza, if you're a fan of classic Italian pizzas. And out of Hill.com, Congress doubles down on explosive claims of illegal UFO retrieval programs. Once again, folks, that is just some of the news that's fit to print right there on our Curious Realm Facebook group. Stop on by, follow us. Join the conversation. While you are there, make sure to follow the Facebook page of our guest tonight, Daniel Harari. Excuse me. he is a fantastic author. He is the author of the book After They Came. We will be talking to him here in just a second. He is also the author of the headline article of this month's MUFON Journal. If you're a MUFON member like I am, a MUFON supporter, it came in your mail this month. The title of the article is Why I Think My Father Was Involved with UFOs for the Military. That is what we will be talking about tonight. That, and of course, his book. You can find more about Dan at his website, danharariauthor.com. Welcome to the show. Dan, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me, man. That was terrific. You really did your homework, I think.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I try to. I Google stalk every guest lightly once I connect with them.
It's always always better to be prepared than have no idea what the heck you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. I have been enjoying, I'm probably about 70, 80 pages into the book right now. This just landed on my doorstep over the weekend. And am very excited to be reading it. But your book, though it is a fictionalization, is actually based off of a real life event that you had, as well as possible inclinations that you have that your father may have been a civilian contractor for the U.S. military in regards to UFOs, UAP technology, things like that. So let's begin at the beginning, Dan. How was it that you first came, I guess, to the topic of UFOs in your life?
Okay, great question. One thing, my dad was not a contractor. My dad was an employee of the Army.
Sorry about that. Yes, an employee.
Okay, so thanks for having me on. Dan Harari is my name. My two brothers and I grew up in a town called Deal, New Jersey, which is just next to Asbury Park, New Jersey. And everyone knows Bruce Springsteen came from Asbury Park, New Jersey. And when I was in high school, I worked with Bruce Springsteen. When I was 16, I used to run a rock concert hall. I was the stage manager there, me and my best friend in high school.
Oh, wow.
So my friend and I, and lots of my friends, we knew Bruce. You know, Chris, I have to start with Bruce because it's Asbury Park. So my friends and I, we all knew Bruce Springsteen for a couple of years before he ever got famous. So that's kind of an interesting side note to my life story.
That's awesome.
So I grew up in Deal, just outside Asbury Park. My parents were from Brooklyn. They married in 50, moved down to the Jersey Shore in 52. I was born in 56. In 52, actually 51, even before my dad got married, my dad was a physicist / electronics engineer, scientist. He got hired right out of college by the U.S. Army at Fort Monmouth, which is an army base on the Jersey Shore. And Chris, I told you, I just did a presentation for MUFON LA the other day. Fort Monmouth was one of the top electronics installations the government had in the United States to develop new drones and missile systems and radar systems. So keep all that stuff in mind. But my dad worked for Fort Monmouth as a civilian engineer, 1951 till he retired in 1996. He started, I think, as a GS-5, which means government service. And when he left, he was very high up the ladder. I believe he was a GS-13, which Jimmy Church told me was very impressive. I didn't even know what that was. So anyway, so here's where my story begins. March 1970, I am just about 14 years old. My dad picked me up from school, drove me home. Suburban Street, New Jersey, Deal, New Jersey, bright sunny day, maybe 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm in my dad's car. He's driving me home. I'm thinking about my homework, whatever. And I saw through the windshield, Chris, above my dad's car, a huge silver V like Victor, craft, big silver V, bright, shiny aluminum color right over my father's car. And it was unbelievable. So I'm jumping up and down on my seat. I'm going, Dad, there's a UFO. Stop the car. Stop the car. Dad, there's a UFO. Dad, stop the car. My dad and I got out. We looked straight up in the air. And Chris, I'm jumping up and down like a lunatic. Dad, a UFO. Isn't this great? We're seeing a UFO. And my dad looked at this thing, Chris, like he was looking at a head of lettuce at the supermarket. It was like something he'd seen 1,000 times.
Interesting.
Surprise, no fear, no curiosity. It was like he was looking at his car go through a car wash. I remembered it in the moment. At the moment, there was something very strange about his reaction. Then the best part of the story, my dad leans over, winks at me, Chris. My dad winked at me and goes, "Come on, kid, let's go home. We're watching the UFO. Come on, kid, let's go home." Because he was bored. Get in the car, go home. I call, I had a rotary phone, 1970, rotary phone. I called the rotary phone. I called the Asbury Park Press newspaper. I said, "Hi, my name is Danny. I'm 14 years old. I just saw a UFO in the sky with my dad. And I'm calling to report it. And the lady, I'll never forget, she goes, Sonny, I'm really sorry. I can't talk to you right now. I'm getting hundreds of phone calls about this. I got to go. I can't talk to you right now. So I looked in the paper every day that week for an article. Nothing ever ran, okay? Nothing ran. Now we cut to 47 years later. I had forgotten about this, Chris, for 47 years.
Wow.
Why did I forget? Some people said I was abducted. Some people said I had missing time. I'll tell you why I forgot. I was into rock and roll. I was a drummer. I was a rocker. From the age of 10, when the Monkees came on TV. But when I was 14, I was in bands. I was chasing girls. My best friends and I went to every rock concert known to mankind. I wasn't thinking aliens, UFOs. You know, I was thinking Led Zeppelin. And Pink Floyd. So that's why I just completely forgot about it. Okay, what happens in 2017, 47 years later? My father passed away. Okay, so my father passed away. I went to a deli in West LA to get a pastrami sandwich. This is all true. Everything I'm telling you is true. And to think about my dad and how much I was going to miss him. And as I'm waiting for my sandwich, Chris, a beam of light or energy or magic, a beam of magic came into my brain from heaven. True story. I don't know what it was. Beamed into my brain at the restaurant there. And in my brain, I replayed the 1970 Silver V sighting as a home movie. I saw it as a home movie. I had forgotten about it for 47 years, and it played as a home movie 3 days after my dad died. Now, let's think about that. That's pretty remarkable, right?
Absolutely.
So I saw it in my brain, and I saw the craft again. I saw my dad had no reaction, and I remembered my dad winked at me. And I was like, holy S word. My dad knew what that was. So I didn't, that's when I put it together, 2017, that my dad had knowledge that he never shared with my mother or my brothers or I. Okay, next part of the story. Oh, okay. So while I'm still waiting for my pastrami sandwich, I asked the waiter for a pen. And then, Chris, my hand started doing automatic writing on the paper tablecloth there. And my hand wrote, write a book about benevolent aliens. And then my hand wrote, lead character's father knew about UFOs. And then I wrote ATC, all capital, ATC. And then my hand stopped writing. And I looked at the paper and I said, ATC, what the heck is that? I had no clue what that was. Didn't know what it meant. I kept staring at it until after they came into my brain. Okay, so I saw the 1970 sighting. My hand did the writing. I finally got my pastrami sandwich. I inhaled it. I raced home. And Chris, every single day for the next 8 months, I wrote this book after they came. That's how this book came into the world.
That is an incredible story, Dan. And to know that once again, you put this out of mind for 47 years. And I have talked to numerous experiencers on this show of not only UFOs, but numerous paranormal events. And that is the case so many times where the most innocuous thing in the world re-triggers the vivid memory of the experience. What was it like for you when that memory did come flooding back? I mean, of course, not only the inspiration for the book, was in that thunderbolt, but emotionally, what was that like for you to kind of relive that home movie?
Chris, it was a profound moment in my life beyond words. I did a talk for MUFON LA Sunday 2 days ago, and I told this story. And this is true. There was a gentleman in the crowd, a very nice guy. And he raised his hand, and I said, yeah. And he goes, Dan, I'm a medium. He goes, your father sent you that story from heaven. when you were waiting for your pastrami, said that, he goes, that came to you from your father.
Wow.
And then, Chris, this guy stood up. He was covered head to toe. I swear to God, he was covered head to toe with goose pimples. And he said, Dan, your father's in the room with us right now. And he had me, I'm getting chills right now, to be honest. He had me touch his skin. He was covered head to toe in goose pimples. He said, Dan, your dad couldn't tell you in life what he did for a living because it was top secret. But in the afterlife, because Chris, my vision came 3 days after my dad. It was from my dad. And I like to think it was from my dad from heaven. He was saying, Danny, I couldn't tell you my whole life, you know, I had a top secret job. Yeah. I couldn't tell you what I did for all those years. But now that I'm dead, I don't need my pension anymore. No one's going to threaten to kill me. And I guess my secret to your oath is probably you paid in full, right? My father paid
at that point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a profound moment. It was like finding out like your father was James Bond in a way. It was like a secret that I never knew. Now, let me tell you this next part. So when I'm writing the book, the first day I called my mother. Now, my mother's still alive. She's 88 now. God bless her. I said, Mom, did Dad ever talk to you about UFOs? And she said, early on in his career at Fort Monmouth, the early 50s at Fort Monmouth. Now, Fort Monmouth is a top secret Army base. They took him deep into the vaults and they showed him something top secret. And he came home nervous and white and pale and shaky. And my mother said to him, honey, what's wrong? And my father said, I saw something. They showed me something today in the vaults that I can never tell you or anyone about as long as I live. And my mother added, Chris, to me, she said, Danny, your dad was never the same after that day.
Wow.
Now think about that. Right? My dad was super outgoing and gregarious and happy-go-lucky. She said, the dad I knew was a very serious man. He was a serious person. Rarely, you know, made jokes or anything silly. My dad had to have seen, now this is my guess, I'm guessing, I believe my dad saw a recovered craft or some recovered technology, extraterrestrial. I don't think he saw alien bodies, but you know the Jackie Gleason story, Chris? You know,
yes.
You must know that.
Yes.
Right? Nixon showed Jackie Gleason dead alien, and Jackie Gleason's wife said he was never the same, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do I know this for sure? No. Okay, but let's put the clues together. My dad works for the Army for 45 years, starting in 1951. Now, 1951 is 4 years after Roswell. So that's pretty close to Roswell, if in fact we have recovered data, which I'm sure we do. So he was there 45 years, Army base, top secret clearance. My dad gave talks at the Pentagon all through my childhood, that I know. My dad went to White Sands Missile Testing Grounds countless times all through my childhood. He once told me he wrote reports that had been read by several U.S. presidents, starting with Kennedy. He told me I was impressed with that. My father and I saw a major UFO sighting, and he had no expression on his face. My dad winked at me, and then I called my mother, and she said he saw something top secret in the vaults, and he never told anyone, even on his deathbed, he never told anyone. So if you put all that together, here's what I believe now. The craft I saw with my father, this is what I think today. I don't think it was extraterrestrial. I believe truly in my heart it was a military man-made drone, Chris, that my dad either knew, had a hand in designing or had seen a test flight, maybe out of White Sands, wherever.
Sure.
Because I'm telling you, if you saw this guy's face, you would say, well, he clearly knows what he's looking at. I believe it was a man-made military drone that incorporated extraterrestrial technology. I truly believe that in all my heart, that that's what that was.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there is, I would say it's pretty well beyond hypothesis with patents that have come out, things like that. The going hypothesis out there is that the anti-gravity barrier was cracked in 1950s. And to think that once again, any craft that you saw may have been powered by something like that, that your father may have had a hand in either reverse engineering or tinkering with that technology or even knowing about the program, is pretty incredible.
A couple of drips and drabs in my life when he would reveal something, Chris, only a couple, and they're so few, I could tell you. I asked my dad in high school, what do you do for a living? I helped America win the Cold War. And then he walked away and got a beer. That was it. One sentence. That was the sentence. I helped America win the Cold War. Okay. When I was maybe 10 or 11 or something, I remember my dad said, you know, I helped put some beacons on the moon so we could know when we land there in the future, we'll know where we're going to land. This is in the early 60s, my dad did that. In the early 60s, my dad, now I read, Chris, I read up the history of Fort Monmouth, and it says Fort Monmouth put some beacons on the moon in the early 60s. It was it's in black and white. I saw it in print. So what my dad told me was true. The other thing he ever said to me, I don't remember how old I was, maybe high school. He said, you know, I once invented a drone that looked like a flying garbage can, and it flew over North Vietnam to take photographs of our enemy, and it shot film. Now think about this, Chris, right? There was no digital cameras then, right?
Yeah.
So it shot rolls of film, and then my dad said the rolls of film parachuted down to the ground with little beepers on them so our troops could find the rolls of film on the ground. They had little parachutes, apparently, I think. And so when he said he invented a drone that looked like a flying garbage can, well, that implies that lots of drones from the 50s, 60s, 70s looked like odd-shaped things, right? Doesn't that then lead to my father and his colleague, their drones were not didn't look like airplanes. My father's drone, he told me, looked like a garbage can. So that, when I put that together now, the many of the UFOs, perhaps, that have been seen in the last 50 years, maybe a third or half were man-made military drones.
Oh, sure. And I mean, even Dan, whenever you listen to the head of Arrow, whenever you listen to any of the statistics, and I upset some folks in online communities. I was just called a debunker the other day with somebody because I was like, I'm sorry, SD cards have artifacts on them. Like, it happens. It's a rewritable media.
Right.
There's a reason why even though you press delete on something, the police can come back and recover parts of that picture.
Because
the data is still deeply in there, even whenever you hit format on the card. So, yeah, it's but I was called a full-on debunker by somebody, and it kind of hurt. And I was like, no, I'm a believer. It's just that there's only a small, scant slice of 2 to 5%. And even Arrow, the UAP Task Force, everybody has been like, there is like a 5% deviation of cases that are not explainable by airline pathways, sensors going awry, misconfiguration of sensors, human eyesight failing, things like that. They're like 98 to 95% of all cases are fully explainable. Even for you to say that, yes, what you witnessed, you fully believe to be in the world of military drone.
But Chris, honest to God, only after my father died, you know?
Yeah.
Because it made so much sense having just researched Fort Monmouth. And also, this was cool when I did this at my talk on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of scrapbooks in my whole life story. I found 3 weeks ago in one of my scrapbooks a newsletter profiling my father from 1985.
Oh, wow.
And it said who my father was. It was from his workplace. Who he was, what he did. My father was the head of some, it was very complicated. He was the head of a major drone program there. He invented some device, Chris, that allowed a laser beam target in the sky to shoot and destroy a military tank. My father invented that, whatever that's called, laser artillery thing.
Wow.
So when I read this, I'm like, okay. So my dad did quite remarkable things. He never talked about it. He never shared it, not even with my mother. Couldn't. My dad was a patriot to America. He was never, ever going to risk his pension. My dad's whole life was, when I'm 65, pension. 32 more years, I get my pension. 18 more years, I get my pension. Now, my dad was never going to reveal a secret, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, my personal belief, of all the things that are weird in the sky, here's what I believe, roughly, I believe a third of those things are balloons, birds, a misidentified phenomenon. Okay, absolutely. I think a third are military man-made items that we never saw because they were top secret, like things that my dad did.
Yeah.
And then I believe the other third are absolutely extraterrestrial. I could tell you about my 2008 sighting. I know that was an extraterrestrial craft. I know it in my heart.
And what was your 2008 sighting, Dan?
Okay, so we'll go back in time just a hair. So in 70 was this sighting with my dad, which I absolutely, truly forgot all about. That was that. I'll tell you a quick middle story. 1996, I'm now married and divorced and have two little kids. So my son was 8 years old. My ex-wife moved out to Lancaster, California, near Edwards Air Force Base. And I visited my kids every weekend for many years when they were little, on the weekend. So my son Jordan was 8, 1996. He wanted a telescope for his birthday. Got him a telescope. We're looking in the sky. If you're familiar with Lancaster or Palmdale, it's called the High Desert. And out there, the sky is very clear because there's no smog and there's no city lights. So it's a black sky, bright stars, bright planets. You see everything really well out there. So my son and I looked through the telescope and we saw the moon and we saw Saturn and we saw whatever. We saw all the cool stuff. And as I was going to turn around and put him to bed, suddenly a bright light from the far right corner of the sky. It was very bright, like white, yellow color. Chris, it looked kind of like an egg. It was an oval shape. It appeared suddenly, and it went all the way across the sky in a straight line very quickly. And I said to my son, Jordan, I go, Jordan, there's a satellite. Isn't that cool? Look, there's a satellite. Clearly, it had to be. It looked metallic. And then, Chris, so it goes all the way across the sky. Goes to the left side of the sky. And then it stopped in place for about 20 or 30 seconds. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, wow, that satellite's going to crash to Earth. It's going to crash. Something went wrong. Then it turned around and it went all the way back where it came from in the same line just as fast. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a UFO or military or extraterrestrial, but it's not a plane. It's not a bird. It's not a helicopter. It's not a comet. Nothing can go that far in a straight line, stop for 30 seconds and then reverse course. Nothing could do that. So that was my second UFO story. In 07, I joined MUFON. In 08, James Gilliland, do you know who he is?
Yes.
Okay. So that's my 08 story. James Gilliland in 08, he owns the Esetti Ranch. I'm sure a lot of your people know, in Washington State at the base of Mount Adams. And he gave a talk at MUFON LA. I was with a girlfriend named Barbara at the time. And he said, you know, it's a major hotspot for UFO sightings. We have them for hundreds of years. The Indians call Mount Adams the Mountain of Shining Light. We have people from NASA and governments and the military come all the time to check us out. So I said to my girlfriend, I go, we got to go to this place.
Yeah.
So this is 4th of July weekend, 08. He had a 3-day weekend up there during the days. It was like Nick Pope and William Henry doing films and lectures and slideshows and history, you know, ancient alien theory, all that great stuff. Now, under a tent, that was during the day, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And at night, in the field, many acres of nothing. It's just nothing. It's a big, huge field at the base of Mount Adams. And at night, Chris, they made a bonfire and people played guitars and tambourines and dancing and singing. Decided, like, you know, to like lure something to happen. So my girlfriend and I, first day, we went to the seminars and the films. That night, the bonfire, we're looking up in the sky hours and hours. You know, your neck gets tired after a while. Nothing happened. Okay, that's fun. Second day, films, lecture seminars, bonfire, looking up in the sky. I had one of those big camcorders at the time. It's like heavy. Looking up in the sky, your neck hurts, hours and hours, nothing at all. Third night, same thing, lectures, films, bonfire, looking up in the sky, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, nothing. I go, Barbara, I go, I have my keys in my hand, Chris. I go, let's go home. If we go right now, we'll beat the traffic. I swear to God, I said that. No sooner did I say that, a craft appeared over our heads out of absolutely nowhere. I'm going to say there were 250, 300 people there.
Wow.
I'm going to say 50, 60 foot black teardrop shaped craft, maybe a couple hundred feet above us, right over our heads. And then the best part, Chris, underneath the craft was a dome, and the dome turned its light on, and it was bright, deep emerald green colored light, like emerald green from The Wizard of Oz. Gorgeous, gorgeous color. And this light, man, I'm telling you, it went on and off. It flashed above our heads 10, 12, 15 times as if to say, hello, we're here. We're sorry we're late. We got caught up in traffic on the 101, you know. We love you. We were in the neighborhood. We know you've been waiting for us. Everything's cool. Don't be afraid. We love you. We're in the neighborhood. And it's so cool that you wanted to see us. Here we are. Here's our little light show. Have a wonderful evening. And Chris, I swear to God, the light turned off and zoom, took off 3 seconds later, completely vanished. Now I cried. People cried, you know, people were hugging and kissing and dancing and singing. I'm crying. I'm like, Barbara, we saw extraterrestrial beings communicate with us. That was not a Chinese weather balloon, Chris. That was not a drone that my dad built. You know, that this was them. This was them. So those are my three sightings. I've never had any others. Those are the three. The first two, I'm pretty sure, were both military. I think the one at Edwards, you know, I told Jimmy Church the story. He goes, Dan, it was at Edwards. He goes, of course it was a military reverse engineer. I go, yeah, you're probably right. But Chris, this third one at East City, man, that was them. I know it was them.
That is an incredible story, Dan. And I mean, you know, one of those that it's the moment that everybody who hopes for the experience hopes for, you know, to be able to witness something in such a way, not where it's just a glancing moment, but where it is directly there in front of you, I want to kind of marry your experience in that moment, especially knowing what you know, with the belief that that was craft, not ARV, alien reproduction vehicle, or, you know, government drone, anything like that. Right. I remember you saying that when your father saw the craft in 1970, he was speechless, though he reacted to you.
Chris, I wouldn't say he was speechless, really. I would say he
more blasé.
Embarrassed would, I would almost say embarrassed would be the word, as if to say, oh God, my son is with me and we're looking at one of my top secret things that I know about, and I'm with my son, you know, like I don't want to lie to my son.
Yeah.
So I guess I should say, no. Chris, he said, I swear to God, he said no words, you know.
Like, yeah.
If you and I were there, so what we saw, you and I would have been hugging each other, jumping up and down.
Well,
any normal person would have been jumping up and down. This is the coolest thing I ever saw in my life. My dad was almost embarrassed, like, oh God, I hope my son doesn't ask any questions about this.
Well, and that's why I'm asking you the question about the relation between the two. And if you know, because so many times I hear from so many witnesses who were there with somebody else. Like, these are things sometimes, Dan, that drive wedges in people's relationships. In the case of Terry Lovelace, his experience in the forests, with the craft that he saw, he and his buddy that were in the military together, like, no longer spoke to each other. They never spoke about the craft. They never spoke about their incident. They never opened their mouth to each other about both mutually being there when this happened. But they never spoke again.
Did they just see the same event as one was a believer and one thought it was nonsense? I don't know that story. I don't know the story.
Yeah. I mean, they both apparently were there. They were camping. They saw this thing in the sky. As far as he knows, he has missing time. He had an implant in his leg. All kinds of things, Dan. But that's not the only case. Like, there are numerous cases where people see something with friends, with witnesses, and there's frequently a strange silence. There's frequently a strange, like, I guess almost disbelief within the conversation, and an emotional disconnect between the witnesses. Did you find that between you and your girlfriend at the time?
No. If I recall, she cried as well. I mean, people were crying with joy, tears of joy. This was a communal, profound experience. We all had it together. We all shared it together. I've not been in touch, and she and I broke up later that year. Nothing to do with the UFO, but it was something very special. It was a gift, Chris. You made a good point earlier. You know, I could have easily gone my whole life having never had that moment.
Absolutely.
But that, I honest to God, I could still feel it when I did my talk that Sunday. But I still feel it in my heart, even right now. I can still feel the warmth of their, I don't, you know, maybe it was like, because it was blinking on and off, you know, like maybe it was alien Morse code, you know what I mean? I don't know what they were saying. My feeling was, hello, we're here, we love you. But, you know, it could have been like a crop circle. It could have been like a Morse code alien message. I don't know. My takeaway was they are here. They exist. They know we're curious. They knew that the people at James Gilliland's ranch in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere, really, really wanted to see them. You know what I mean? It was like if you go to a rock concert, you really want to see The Who on stage.
Yeah.
And when you see The Who, you're all totally 100% into The Who.
Yeah.
Well, people I was with, we were all into the sky that night, man.
Now, that brings up another topic that we speak about regularly with experiencers. And do you think that it is the fact, because there are many times where somebody witnesses something, the person with them does not. Do you think that it is the fact that you were all, I guess, vibrationally in the same place? You know, like with the same desire to experience something.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And again, it goes back to James Gilliland's presentation earlier that year, Chris. He showed us films that had been taken over decades of time at his ranch, and one was better than the next. And he said to everyone, he goes, if you want to come and see something, I can't guarantee you, but I can assure you, you'll have at least some kind of an experience out there, because everyone does. So I went, everyone who went there, look, it was hundreds of dollars for the weekend. You had to stay at a bed and breakfast. It was in the middle of no, you have to drive for hours to get there. All right. You know, the end of Close Encounters, my favorite movie of all time.
Same.
Favorite movie. All right. Richard Dreyfuss, Melinda Dillon, and that other schmucky guy with the brown leather jacket. They're the last, they're like, they wanted to be there so bad. They defied every obstacle. They were going to see that by hook or by crook. Nothing was going to stop them. The people that went to James Gilligan Ranch that 3-day weekend, we so wanted to be there and we so wanted to have an experience. So, it is kind of funny, you know, it's kind of funny that it happened on the last night. It's kind of funny. I think this is funny. I had my keys in my hand, Chris, because there were so many cars on the grass. I thought, boy, it's going to take a while to get out of here. There's so many cars here. So it showed up. It was almost like Dan, You know, don't get in your car.
Don't go yet.
I know you have your keys. We have a light show for you. Just hang out. We'll be right there. But to answer you, everyone who had that experience wanted it, longed for it, hoped for it, and it was a gift we all got. Everyone there who was smiling and crying, everyone there. There was no one who said, oh, that's BS, man. That's a laser light. Some James Gilliland shining the light with his laser pen.
Nobody said
anything like that at all.
And how, looking at these experiences now, Dan, the one in 1970 with your father, the one later at the Air Force Base, and the one at the ranch, how have these experiences changed you as a person? How have they? I mean, of course, they led you and inspired you to write after they came. But in addition to that, how have they changed the way that you filter the world? Have they changed the way that you process reality? Anything like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. Well, a couple things. This is interesting. In 70, I saw a UFO with my dad. In 96, I saw a UFO with my son, right? That's pretty cool. And then in 08, I saw a UFO with a girlfriend. So all three times I was with someone that I loved. So that's kind of cool, I guess, you know?
Sure.
And someone just pointed out to me recently, he said, Dan, you're sighting with your son, you know, you saw a thing with your dad and then you saw one with your son. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. It wasn't obvious.
Yeah, that's the first thing I was going to point out was the generational connection there.
Yeah. So I believe in looking back now, I believe all three of those sightings were meant for me personally to see with my own eyes and to experience. That's number one. Number two, when I joined MUFON in actually 07, the year before Gilliland, I joined MUFON in 07. The first talk I ever saw at MUFON, Chris, was Giorgio Tsoukalos. He did Ancient Alien Theory. He talked about Eric von Daniken's books and cave drawings and petroglyphs of craft and beings and biblical references to UFOs in the Bible. And I sat there, man, and I was like, oh, my God. There's all this information in the world that I know nothing about. So for me personally, 07 is when I began really to get interested in this topic. Okay. But it all gelled for me. We all come back to 2017. My dad died. My dad sent me the home movie from heaven. I know that's what it was. And when after my dad sent me that home movie from heaven, I'm like, wow. Well, I totally am into this topic. I never knew what my dad did for a living. I'm mourning my father's death. My father just told me through paranormal means, Danny, I worked on UFOs. He told me from heaven. He said, Chris, it all just gelled, man. It gelled so wonderfully. I'm so blessed. I went home and wrote this book. It's a science fiction novel, but throughout I have threads of ufology history in there. I have aspects of my life. I have aspects of my father's life. It's a tribute to my dad. I've gotten wonderful. I've been so lucky, man. I've gotten wonderful reviews from Nick Pope and Richard Dolan and George Norrie and Jimmy Church and Earl Anderson and Kathleen Martin and Travis Walton. I've been blessed. And it's honest to God. And this is not to brag because people have told me, Dan, you channeled the book. And I really, I believe it. I did. Because I went to get a pastrami sandwich, Chris. I didn't go there to go and think I should write a book. I was there to cry for my dad. That's all I was there for, to think about my dad. I got a book out of it. And now, 4 or 5 months later, Steve Bassett's one of my best friends. Earl Anderson's literally one of my best friends. George Norrie and I are tight. I'm launching a group. Awesome. I'll tell you this, with Steve Bassett. We're launching the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. I'm a Hollywood publicist for 40 years. Steve is Mr. Disclosure, as you know, and you know as well as I do.
Yeah.
And he and I have been meeting. We've been meeting for the last 3 months. We're going to put together a group in the fall to marry the filmmakers and storytellers in Hollywood to the Richard Dolans and the Nick Popes and the Steve Bassetts, and to blend and share. We're going to be like a resource, a nonprofit. We're going to create a nonprofit. And if you'd like to be part of that, I'll certainly have you tie you in somehow. I really have a feeling it's going to I think it's gonna, we're gonna give birth to it in September. I'm hoping it takes off. But I almost, since my dad died, I've been on like on a mission to discuss disclosure. I've told all my friends and relatives, people that didn't know anything about this topic are much more well informed now because of me. I'm much more informed because of my dad's vision and being a member of MUFON for all these many years. And I'm grateful to people like you and Nori and Jimmy Church.
Thank you.
And Dave Scott and people who have been giving me a platform, not just to sell the book. Of course, I want to sell my book, of course. But this is the most profoundly important topic, I believe. It changed my, to answer your question, it changed my entire view of mankind. I was raised conservative Jewish, like really pretty hardcore Jewish, okay? I never missed Yom Kippur. I did all the Jewish things that were little Jewish boys are supposed to do. I met Giorgio in 07. This is true. I met Giorgio in 07 at MUFON. He told me ancient alien theory, which has been around forever. I discovered it in 07. And I cried and I went up to Giorgio. I hugged him. I go, Giorgio, you've just changed my view, my worldview. You've changed. You've opened my eyes to a whole new world. And I don't really consider myself Jewish anymore. I would call myself a spiritualist or something. So had a profound, this topic had a profound effect on my life.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so frequently the story with our guest, Dan. It is a stealing experience when, and that goes across the board for paranormal. A lot of people, I don't know why people do not include UFOs in paranormal topic, because I don't know, it seems kind of outside of the norm to me.
That would be the granddaddy of paranormal. Well, yeah. ghosts, of course. Ghosts and UFOs, they might be 50-50 to some people.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting that you bring that up because, you do have a new book coming out in this upcoming winter or in a year, My Paranormal Life. And like you said, it is one of those that one leads into the other. It's hard to have one without the other, you know. It's kind of like you can't have the light without the shadow.
Last year, my first book came out last year. It's called Flirting with Fame. And that's about my 40 years as a Hollywood publicist. But it's also the 10 years earlier when I was in high school, when I worked with Bruce Springsteen and Kiss and Fleetwood Mac and Humble Pie and Deep Purple and all these, every rock band you can think of from the 70s. I worked with them when I'm 15, 16, and 17. So that was my Hollywood stories, career memoir. Okay. Then I write after they came, after my dad died, and I just told you that story, how that came to be. Sci-fi, but blending in aspects of my life and my father. Last Christmas, just 6 months ago Christmas, I was bored to tears. Chris, I had nothing to do over the holidays. Bored. Clients were quiet. I sat down and I started to think about the ghosts. Well, my dad has visited me as a ghost numerous times after he passed. My dad came to me at least six times as a ghost. So I wrote those down, and then I put the UFO sightings down because they're not really in this book. And then my grandfather was 20 years ago. I lived with a woman here in Beverly Hills. Our apartment was haunted. We had a poltergeist. Things used to break and crash and knock walls and slam doors in the middle of the night. All true. And we did a Ouija board, and we talked in the Ouija board, and I found out that the ghost in my house was my father's father, of all people. My grandpa Joe from Syria. I said, where are you from? What's your name, Joseph? Where are you from, Syria? Are you my grandpa Joe? Yes. Well, of course he was. Who else did I know who was from Syria? It was my grandfather. So I just put, it was a hobble and a cobble of different stories. When I was five, here's an interesting story. When I was five, I was climbing a billboard sign with two little girls, my little neighbors, and they were probably seven or eight, and I'm five. And we climbed the billboard sign, and I fell off the sign. I remember clear as day falling through the air. fell through the air. I'm looking up at the sky. I'm 5 years old. The next scene in that movie is I wake up on a couch in a house several blocks away. No one was home. I wake up. I sit on the couch, look around, and no one was home. And then, Chris, as I got up to leave, I turned to my right, and there was a being at the door, at the screen door. And I explained it to my daughter, and she said, "Dad, that was a gargoyle." The way I explained it, it was this 7-foot-tall creature. It looked like his wings had been cut off. He was like white milk chocolate color. He had like a bull's face. He snorted.
Wow.
He snorted when he looked at me, and then he left. Now, I looked it up. Gargoyles protect people and buildings.
Yeah.
I think when I fell off the sign, perhaps I died, or if I didn't die, this, I'm telling you, and my mother thinks it was a dream. I go, "Mom, I'm telling you, it's my first memory, clear as day. This creature saved my life when I was 5. So I just put all these things together, and that's my paranormal life.
Wow. Incredible. I can't wait for it. Like I said, I have been enjoying After They Came. I cannot wait for the true stories of Dan Harary.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Listen, if you like After They Came all the way through, if you'd be kind enough to give me a quote, I'll add it to my PR.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. It is been enjoyable. I read a lot of research. I read a lot of research books, things like that. And it's fun to find the ones that are fictionalizations of events and people's experiences.
Right.
It always gives things a different twist and a different way to look at it. And right. It's even better to have conversations and hear the actual things that inspired the story, the actual events, and to hear you and even to read your article in MUFON Journal this month and read about the things that you found out about your father after his passing from your mom.
Right.
It's absolutely, you know, wild, Dan. Absolutely wild.
It's I consider not my dad's passing was very hard for me, but yeah. I really, since he died 6 years ago, I've met almost all of the top UFO researchers. I'm friends now with several of them. I've done the top UFO, UAP media outlets. My book is selling well. You know, Travis Walton's quote on my book, you know, "This should be a movie." You used to probably say, "This would be a good film adaptation."
Yeah.
Well, coming from Travis Walton, man, when I saw that, I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. George Norrie told me on the air, "Danny, you have a movie here." George told me that on the air. I go, "Yeah, George, I'll call my buddy Steven Spielberg and tell him." So, to me, you know, an interest that happened only in 07, it tied in my earlier sightings that I had. And when my dad passed, he told me who he was from heaven. And it meant it gelled. It all just came together wonderfully. I'm very touched. It's a gift my dad gave me after he passed.
Absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for your time tonight and for your candid conversation.
Such a
personal topic. Once again, the passing of your father and the presentation of this information to you by him. Thank you for that. You're welcome.
I've never heard of a comparable story to this one.
Yeah, it is.
Everyone I've told has said, you know, yeah, boy, that's quite a story. And again, honest to God, it was a gift that my dad gave me after the fact. He couldn't tell me during, me and my dad, we were close, man. He couldn't tell anyone, you know, what he did. My dad accomplished remarkable things.
You know.
And from the other side, he was kind of like, okay, Danny, here's an idea. Make a book. Move the ball forward. That's how I look at it.
And it's different. Dan, you know, people always say like, oh, I'd go whistleblower, things like that. These were people from a different time. These were people from a time where you could still fully trust your government.
Right.
They were from the time before Eisenhower, before he was like, hey, man, we had to do crazy things to win this war. Go make sure to, you know, go get your rights back from Congress. Go get everything back from the contractors that we gave to them, so that we could win this thing. But
I remember my dad saying, "Danny, you just so you know, your father's a patriot." I mean, he saw himself as a patriot. What did that mean? Not revealing top secrets.
That's it. When you took that oath, you took that oath, and you took that oath for life. No different than and you may say this is extreme, folks, but any quote oath keeper out there, see themselves in the same light, keeping their oath no differently, you know. And we have to respect that, whether you're on one side and going, get out of here. We want to overrule everything and flip and turn things over. Or no, I'm going to keep my secrets and I'm going to keep silent the way I said I would.
I know we have to wrap up, but it would be if my dad had Alzheimer's the last 2 years. So he didn't even know who he was. And it was, he didn't know who I was. It was really sick. But if my dad was alive today, still, he'd be in his 90s and didn't have Alzheimer's, and Grush came along, right? I would love, boy, what I wouldn't do to talk to my dad right now and say, "Dad, okay, I know, even if you can't really tell me, but what do you think of this Grush guy?" Like, that would be fascinating to have that conversation with my father. My dad was in the heart. He was in the heart of the Cold War era. He was a Cold Warrior, my father, not with guns, but with his brains. He was a genius. With his slide rule and his mechanical pencil. Yeah. My dad helped us keep us safe from the Russians. So
I want to thank you once again so much for your time tonight. Before we let you go, let everybody know once again, of course, other than the Curious Realm store, where they can go to pick up their copy of After They Came, where they can go to keep up with all of the latest from Dan Harary.
Okay, so After They Came is available on paperback or Kindle on Amazon. It's also available from my publisher, Genius Book Publishing. That one might be cheaper. So either Amazon or Genius Book Publishing. And if anybody wants to know more about me or contact me, it's right there from Chris, danhararyauthor.com, danhararyauthor.com. All my books are there. My blog, my email, and again, people like Chris, and you guys are great, man. You guys rock. And yeah, you can see some fun photos. There's me with Giorgio Tsoukalos and Eric Von Daniken.
Too awesome. Chris,
I give Eric Von Daniken my book. He goes, "Thanks, Dan. I haven't read this one yet." I go, "Eric, it just came out 3 days ago. That's why you haven't."
Of course you haven't read it.
Yeah. All right, brother. Thanks, man.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to let you go. I will be in touch with links for this tomorrow. Everything is going out live, all that kind of good stuff. Thank you again for your time, Dan, and we look forward to having you on again later.
Great. I'd love to come back for my next book, man.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have you back. Take care and Godspeed in all you do.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow. Amazing conversation. What a great guy and amazing story. You know what? Number one, to have the UFO experience with your father, and then to have it with your son as well. Pretty wild. I mean, number one, to have more than one experience in life to begin with the paranormal, is incredible. So, Dan Harary, thank you so much for your time. Make sure to stop on by his website, folks. Stop on by Curious Realm. Buy your copy of his book, After They Came. Of course, stop on by. Join MUFON. I can't tell you what it is to get these every month. See the sighting reports, everything else. Stop on by and check them out, folks. I am not affiliated with MUFON in any way other than being a lifetime contributor to MUFON. I, of course, sponsor their conference every year. But aside from that, I get no money from MUFON. I am not a MUFON spokesperson. I just truly believe in what they do and in the cause of what they do for the cataloging of sightings and experiences. So thank you once again, Dan. When we come back from commercial, everybody, we will be joined by Mary Helen Hensley. The topic is alternate lives that encroach on your current life. Could you have a life, a past life that you don't know about that may be affecting your reality? What can you do to kind of suss that out? And what can you do to help that out? We'll get into that and so much more with Mary Helen Hensley right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit podcastcadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training. And use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is podcastcadet.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back from that oh-so-refreshing break. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors, especially Truhemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by. Check out their full-spectrum CBD products over at TrueHempScience.com. Make sure to use the code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and get yourself a free edible as well. While you are online, of course, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That is where you can find all of our content. That's where you can sign up for mailing lists. That's where you can fill out our experiencer form if you're an experiencer of the paranormal. That is also where you can find our video vault, where you can follow all of our guest content, including Dr. Mary Helen Hensley, who you can find at maryhelenhensley.com, as well as signs.app, signes.app. We will be talking a little bit about that today. But to start off the conversation, we will be talking about past lives, things like that, how sometimes those things eke into our lives and what we can do to clean that up, what we can do to, I guess, refreshen our lives, help get rid of some of that past trauma that may be lurking about. So welcome back to the show, Mary Helen Hensley. How are you doing?
I am great. Thank you for having me back. It's great to be here.
Always great having you back. It's always a reinvigorating conversation whenever I have you on. So let's begin with how have things been over there with you?
Things in Ireland are very strange, as they are around the rest of the world.
Yeah.
It's like, where does one begin? Where, do we want to talk about the weather, or do we want to talk about what's happening in the Ukraine? Do we want to talk about what's happening with our refugees? Like, it's been a mixed bag over here, dude.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. It's been wild over there. And you, as we were saying in our pre-show conversation, you recently in the last couple of years went and spoke at the IANS conference, International Association for Near-Death Studies. I was a sponsor at their conference last year in Salt Lake City. And amazing group of individuals. That was one of my favorite shows to go to. I was sad I did not get to go this year, but when you were there, you were speaking about past lives, things like that. Let's start getting into past lives, your work with past lives, and what past lives might entail for the average person.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually glad we're talking about this because I had such an amazing thing happen last week. Like, look, I've been doing this for 30 something years, and it's one of those things that never ceases to amaze you. It doesn't matter how many times it happens. When I go into a healing session with someone, because healing for me is not, oh, you have X, Y, or Z, and we're going to get rid of that. That's not what healing means. Healing is, how can I, the practitioner, the person who has these kind of strange abilities, assist you in your journey? And that could be dying. It could be, I mean, there are any number of things. Healing means that you're there to assist the person with your special skill set in whatever it is that they need in that moment.
Yeah. And so it's not like you're there to, much like any therapist, it's not like you're there to do the work for them. There's still right. spiritual work that has to be done by people. You are there as an assist.
Exactly. You know, and in some cases they've done that work and they're like having the gum on your shoe. And I'm like, I've already dealt with that. You know, it's, so you go in and you remove the gum from their shoe. Or, you know, that analogy of like, they're trying to live in present time and they're trying to drink a really fantastic cup of coffee through a dirty coffee filter. So, you know, yeah. It could be that you go in and you're cleaning that filter and changing it for them. And then all of a sudden they go, oh, and they see their own light. You know, it's that kind of way. So healing can take on so many different you know, and are there people who come in who've got some crazy disease and they walk out without it? Yes, that happens too. But the same with past lives. We never go in with the intention of, hi, welcome to my office, and today we're going to deal with your past lives. I never, ever, ever do that. It is something that I absolutely allow to unfold. It's a very organic process as to, it might not be what that person needs in the day, or that person might think they're wanting to come, you know, come in to talk to their dead Aunt Judy, and then all of a sudden they're in a past life. So that's what's so amazing about it. It's not something that we're controlling. Hey, let's just go do a past life regression. And there are some amazing practitioners out there who do that. For me, what happens is, while I'm assisting the person with the healing, if whatever, my primary question is always, how can I best assist this person in this moment? And it's not even with what they came to me for. I don't even add that in. It's, how can I best assist this person in this moment? And if suddenly I'm drawn back into 1847 and there we are, and I'm going, oh, that's where this problem started. It's, you're back into that past life. So you, as the practitioner, this is how it works in my world anyway. My people aren't necessarily seeing what's going on. I'm watching the movie. It completely keeps them detached from any kind of trauma or drama. You know, because sometimes we can chase past lives the same way people try to chase a dead loved one. You know, they'll go from medium to medium or practitioner to practitioner looking for, oh, you know, all my past lives. I'm like, dude, do you know how many past lives you've had? Because they're not actually past. They're concurrent. They're happening simultaneously all around you. But, you know, people don't really have a great grasp on that.
Well, and, you know, with that in mind, how do you go about identifying when that is the help that somebody needs? How do you go? Because, I mean,
loud. It's loud.
I mean, I wouldn't say that I have been through a hypnotic regression, and during that regression found out apparently there was something in there about me being a like French immigrant who was a farmhand. That popped up during, this was just a general hypnotic regression, and it was pretty interesting. I have never been through a past life regression. I don't think I have any, and I may be mistaken, I don't think I have any past life trauma that is eking upon my present life. But how do you go about identifying that with somebody?
For me, it just pops up. You know, it's a, there's no mistaking it. There's this kind of, it's like my vision changes, my hearing changes, and now all of a sudden I'm in as a viewer. It's like a remote viewing of a different lifetime. And so I'm actively watching what happens. And so when I go, take me back to where this started, I want to see where, because I don't want to sit and watch 8,000 lives that they've had, you know, doing whatever it was they were doing, because, oh my gosh, you know, for me, it's, where did this thread begin? Because it's always a thread, you know, and that thread could consist of one lifetime, or it could consist of 100. Because if we're studying something, the soul that is incarnate, and if they're taking on different lifetimes to see things from different perspectives, sometimes they get it in one go and sometimes they get it in 50. And it's not a punishment or a retribution or anything like that. It is them in control of putting themselves into these lifetimes so that they can experience things from different angles. It's like, you know, it's like if you were photographing a subject, you can have one straight on photograph, or you can photograph them from every possible angle. And so past lives will often, or concurrent lives will often, you know, work in that same way. And so I'm like, take me to where I need to go to see what is messing them up in current time. What are we hooked onto? What's causing an issue? So, for example, this was so amazing because, like, my office is like the most fun office ever. People love coming in here. First of all, because you are greeted by my amazing office manager who also has Tourette's. So I am like living my best life with this woman with Tourette's, because it, like, everyone loves her and they're so used to her. So she's like learning stuff, you know, and I don't know if you've ever been around somebody with Tourette's.
Depends on the tick, but yes.
Oh my God, the ticks are just, and she, you know, she'd be like, come in, Baldy. And then it would be baldy, 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 or I'm hitting the chiropractic table in my office. And she's like, amen, every time I hit the table. She's incredible. And people just feel so at ease around her because she's so at ease and so accepted in the environment. Mm. So it's just like the healing starts when they walk in the door. And but she's just a really funny and so Irish, so Midlands Irish. The sense of humor, the Irish are just, I mean, that's literally why I live here. And they're like, oh, did you move over for a man? Is it the countryside? Is it that? No, it's the sense of humor here. Like, you've never met a nation of people who, like, over here, sorry, can I say, we take the piss out of ourselves. You know, like, they don't speak to you even in their own accent. They're always making a voice or making a, you know, oh, Jesus, you know, they're making fun of their own accents. It's so funny. So there's a lot of laughter here, which is just, to me, so therapeutic. But so you can imagine, she's such a character. Well, in comes this lady. And so part of my office manager, Sandra's Tourette's, is she has the verbal tics and the physical tics. So in walks a lady with myoclonus. And if you don't know what that is, that's that full body jerking. You know, it can come from a stroke, it can come from a brain injury, or in this woman's case, it could come from somewhere very unexpected. So, I have her permission to talk about this because it was just so fascinating. And look, like with any job, we can get, it's not that you ever get bored, but it's kind of like same old sometimes. And then the really extraordinary ones come in where it's just, oh my gosh. And it reminds you why you love what you do so much. Well, this was that day last week. So she's walking in, you know, like the tics are like, do you remember it? Did you see Men in Black? Of course.
Oh yeah.
So do you remember the bug guy?
Yep.
All right. So you remember the alien came in and he took the body of that guy, that farmer.
Yeah, the Edgar suit.
And he's walking around, you know, like popping and locking everywhere he's walking. So that's kind of what my clonus looks like for this woman. It's these like spontaneous, like the leg kicks out or the arm jerks or the head goes or whatever. And so she's been told by the medical community that it's from brain damage. And I'm like, let's go see. So in we go. And, you know, I'm just like, look, whoever it is, whatever it is, whatever we need to know, let's do this. And so she was like, awesome. So she lays on the healing table, which now she's being pumped with layer upon layer of different frequencies. And I actually gave to you so that you could share with the audience this exciting news. My frequency guru, the guy that you can turn around and go, listen, I need this, this, this. And he just makes it. He creates it. He's the most incredible. He's a frequency wizard. That's what he is. And he has put years into creating this application to the frequencies that I use in my healing. He's created an app that not only incorporates my work and what I do and some of my books and all, but so many different healers across the board. And this music that he has created, and I mean from everything from mood to sleep to healing X, Y, and Z, it's incredible. And so I'm like directing everybody, run, run, run that way. It's Signes, SINES.app is where you find it. It's incredible. And so what's beautiful about it is it's constantly growing and building. You know, by the end of the year, my show, I have a new little TV show where I'm teaching some of the healing principles in a fun, easy way that's good, easy for people to digest and not get bored, called The Mary Hellion. So I'm taking some of the questions that I'm most asked and answering those in this kind of new format. And that's going to be added on to the Signs app as well. So it's just, it's got all sorts of audiobooks, and like my audiobook understanding is The New Healing, which is all frequency based. So as you're listening to the stories, you're actually immersed in the frequencies that will help you heal from the issues that I'm discussing. So anyway, I use these frequencies in my healings every single day. So your woman is laying on the bed and she's being pumped with layer upon layer of frequency to go in. We're kind of doing a spring cleaning. I'm standing there. I'm like, all right, take me in. Let me see what I need to see. While I'm doing that, I'm emptying the bins. You know, anything that's stuck in there that she's dealt with, but it's kind of like sweeping or taking out the trash. You know, these are things you've been through, dealt with, and you're interacting in a world that's full of frequency and full of so much stimulus now. And so sometimes we forget we've got to stop and we've got to empty the trash. And so when the person's on the table, they're being immersed in these frequencies. And this was why I'm so excited to be sharing this app with people. This beautiful baby created by Greg Papagna is because now everyone can access this. You can go, okay, I need help with this. And there's that category. And, you know, I really want to work on emptying this or shifting this. And there it is. So that's what I'm doing in my everyday work. It's not like we want, I don't want to be the guru that people have to go to in order to do this. I want them to have the tools to be able to access this stuff and do it themselves. So that's why it's super exciting for me. So she's laying in this frequency. It's pumping through her body. And next thing I'm like, what is that? And she starts talking and I'm like, okay, is that Italian? And I'm like, no, that's not Italian. And then I'm like, is that Latin? And it wasn't Latin, but it sounded like Latin. I took Latin in high school and, I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? Well, next thing I start seeing, writing down, downloading this alphabet. And it, when I eventually went back and found it, it's called OSCAN, OSCAN. And it's a pre-Latin alphabet or language or way of speaking. And this woman is, she's talking away. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is interesting. I am such a history buff that when something like this happens and I get to go somewhere I didn't even know existed, I love it. You know, it's one thing, like everybody knows the Titanic and everybody knows London and everybody knows whatever, but like I am now in central Italy with a tribe called the Samnite, S-A-M-N-I-T-E. I'm smelling it. I'm seeing it. I'm there. I'm immersed. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never heard of these people. This is awesome. And so, in 82 BC, the Romans came in and there was an ethnic cleansing and they were wiping out. This was a very peaceful agricultural community. They worshiped the goddess Ops. And I was like, embarrassed to say, I didn't know who Ops was in that moment. Maybe I used to and I forgot, but Ops was the mother of Jupiter. And so this community, this was who they, that was their goddess of choice. And she was, it's actually the Latin base for opportunity. So the goddess Ops is the base root of opportunity. In Greek mythology, she would have been known as Rhea. So this is the mother of Jupiter and she's their goddess. And so what they did was a very, you know, they sacrificed animals, but not in a barbaric way. It was a very, you know, and I'm sure like anybody, any animal sacrifice is barbaric. Yeah. Okay. Consider the source, consider the time, consider where we are. And it's not like people were running around just hatcheting up animals. This was a very, like a religious ceremony. It's like taking, you know, the body of Christ, the wine, the bread, the whatever. It was a very symbolic, but a ritualistic where, in their method of thinking, it needed to be a live being. And so they were animal sacrifices to this goddess Ox. So in 82 BC, when the Romans came in, they did this cleansing. And so the best way I can picture it is picture a group of, you know, like a gang or a you know, a group of army lads or whatever who are up to no good. And they're just, they're, you know, they're picking on people or making fun of them or doing whatever. So the Roman soldiers come in and they see these, you know, kind of farm folks who are worshiping the goddess and sacrificing these animals. And so they decide, because they've been tasked with wiping these people out, let's have a little fun with this. And so they started sacrificing the people the same way those people would sacrifice an animal. And I'm like, watching this whole thing. Well, next thing, the lady on the table is, I even stopped and recorded it because it was just wild. She's begging for her life, but in OSCAN, in this language. And it was so wild to listen to. She was begging. And I was like, I know that word. What is that word? And it was like, I think the word was cumba, which in Latin is like godfather. But in Oskin, I got the simultaneous picture of Anubis taking the dead across and into the next life. And so in Oskin, that's what it meant, what she was saying over and over again. She was basically calling in and going, please, you know, make sure, please take me across into the light. Please make sure that, you know, I'm okay. She's begging for her life.
Oh, wow.
It was wild, right? Well, the other wild things, folks, is that we're now like 45 minutes in deep and she hasn't as much as twitched an eyelid. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. This is not a brain damage scenario where we've got the myoclonus going on. We've got a past life scenario where at this point of trauma, for whatever the reason, this body is associating this twitch with this particular incident with this lifetime. So I'm like thinking, oh, how clever am I for figuring this out? And then all of a sudden, everything changes in the room, as it does sometimes. And now I'm Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Actually, Demon Slayer. So this woman goes from begging for her life in Oskin to there is this very loud hiss. And something that had attached itself to the energy of the trauma. And there's a very good example of this. Now, the writing is fiction, but the concept is so similar to what we who practice this and or deal with this on a daily basis. He nailed it. There's an author called Ben Aronovich, who wrote for Doctor Who. He has a wonderful series, the Rivers of London series. You know, it's a great fiction series, but it talks about magic and it talks about the it uses the London police. So there's, you know, the branch of the London police that people think they know. And then there's an entire branch that deals with the magical side of London.
The magical, you know, issues. Yeah. Yeah.
They're dealing with the fae and they're dealing with things that the average person can't see. And so Ben Aronovich uses this term, which is so apropos that I've nearly adopted it into my own vocabulary because it really describes what we're seeing. And it's called vestigium. And vestigium is like a footprint of an event that took place that one can pick up, which kind of in nowadays terms, we would say cellular memory. But vestigium can also apply to the fact that when something happens, the soul, the energy, or the trauma of an event can get trapped in something. And so what was fascinating in this moment, what I was witnessing as this voice began to come out of this lady, it overpowered the villager begging for his life. And suddenly it is this horrifically ugly. And, you know, people really misconstrue evil. Evil is only evil if you're scared of it, seriously, because it's all about matching energy. So, you know, you start feeling the temperature of the room change and all of a sudden this voice is hissing out of this lady and this, and I'm like, you want to dance, dude? Come on, bring it. And when you approach a situation like that and you go, this is nothing other than we're releasing this energy and letting it go because it attached itself to that trauma of 82 BC where this lady lost her life in a sacrifice by some guys who were up to no good. And so is she possessed? Oh my God, is her myoclonus coming from some kind of demonic possession? No, what happened is this energy attached itself to the memory of that event. So it's not she, the woman, who had this attachment or possession. It was that memory. And so it's really helpful to know that because then you're in control. It can't do anything to you. It was disrupting her frequency. It was disrupting her vibe. And I was like, get out of here. Thanks very much for whatever it was you needed to teach. Thank you. That's wonderful. Now out. We're done.
Now,
simple.
Now, I guess my curiosity at this point would be, with that trauma from 82 BC that is encroaching upon 2023, would that be a trauma that has been lived by every single past life that this person has had, every past incarnation? Because I would assume the fact that in this case, that this spirit has transitioned from body to body, carried on. How does that work?
No, it's a case of it was necessary in this story.
Okay.
The story of who she is now in this lifetime, okay. Right? So you've got, it's just like her genetics. Like, let's say her parents or grandparents or great-grandparents from this lifetime, they're not the same people from two lifetimes ago. You know, some of them could be. Some of them might have shown up as characters in that story, but she doesn't have the same genealogy. She doesn't have the same, the same physical characteristics, the same genetic characteristics. So that changes from lifetime to lifetime.
Sure,
but
sure.
Can you carry memories from lifetimes? Absolutely. So for whatever reason, like, that could go and have nothing to do with the last five lives, but it was necessary, that cellular memory, in this life.
Yeah.
So it manifests as this, you know, like this, as Ben Aronovich says, this vestigium, this footprint of that is coming in, and all of a sudden she's up against, wait a second, this is bizarre. And here's me going, wow, we're an hour and 15 minutes into this, and she hasn't sniffed, let alone jerked or twisted. And I'm going, if this is a proper myoclonus, it doesn't just stop and pause because we're in a healing session. Mm. And I'm like, this is crazy. Not a pop. And I'm like, that's how we know it's attached to this. So it was fascinating. So she then has to go undo her understanding, and she has to unlearn her ideology that this is just sheerly related to some kind of random brain injury.
Mm.
And recognize, oh gosh. And so what will often happen in a case like this is they'll turn around and go, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to go to that part of Italy, or I've always wanted, you'll hear stuff like that. It's really common where, you know, you could have someone who was a female pilot post, you know, in World War II, and they're like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to fly. You get that kind of stuff, these affinities for certain things that suddenly make sense. Well, this was just such a fascinating thing. But so now let me paint this picture for you. So this thing doesn't care that if anybody else is in the office, it doesn't care if there's somebody in the waiting room or whatever. It's yelling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So here's my office manager with her Tourette's, and she's now starting to tick up front.
She's,
I can hear,
she's getting wound up.
Oh, she's, my God. So by the time I get up front, she's doing every decade of the rosary with the beads. And she's not even necessarily, you know, she's very adept at the spiritual, but it was just so funny because it was very loud.
Wow. Wow.
And it was like shouting at me. And yeah, she knew it wasn't me. And she can hear me laughing at it. I'm like, give it to me. Give me your best, because you're going bye-bye. Do you know, like, we're done. If you've exposed yourself now, I'm saying thank you and bye.
Yeah.
And so she is up front and she's got the holy water out. And because she would come from a Catholic background, but she's not necessarily a practicing Catholic. But, you know, there's no atheists in foxholes. And like, we're in demon foxhole now at this stage. And it's like shouting down the office. And then she can hear me just like, you know, come on, you know, give me your best. Let's dance. So this is that scene in the movies where the priest is like sweating profusely and he's got the cross up and the whole nine yards. That's where they really Hollywood it up, because, you know, does this kind of stuff exist? Sure. You know, is there a horned devil standing in the room? No, it's not like that. It's an energy that's causing, you know, because you don't know what kind of, I mean, the stuff that these people practiced in, you know, in these darker ages. So,
well, and I guess that brings up one question, because you mentioned, you know, no, this was just something from her past life that, because of this life, mm-hmm, has had to come out.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean it's present in this time? Yep.
Well, sure. Absolutely. Because it's using that person as the conduit. And I guess my question would come to bear, especially when you're talking spirits, things like that coming from previous times. Does that have anything to do with, let's say, something along the lines of like sins of the father, where, like you're saying, not even because of anything that she may have done in this lifetime, but just because of her being in this timeline, in this lifetime with those people, this had to come up.
Well, I think it was definitely specifically tailored to her experience. This wasn't just like her having to, you know, to shoulder the responsibility of something that somebody did in 82BC. It's not like that. You know, and it's the very same as like, oh my gosh, you know, when people are like, that's evil or it's whatever. Well, why isn't it evil when someone's beloved dead grandfather starts talking? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just energy. It's just, these are just things expressing themselves, and you can give legs to them or not. And if you remain in a space of absolute, look, you can't do anything that comes in here and harms us here, because simply won't let you. You're not allowed. That's not part of my experience. I'm not, you know, so it's like, you know, I've got a pretty good track record of never having been attacked by anything in 30 something years. And let me tell you, I've done an awful lot, and I've seen some weird stuff. Oh, but it's never. I mean, like,
you can revoke consent at any point.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm sorry. Which now that you've revealed,
doing an OSCAN at the time, which was really funny, which I didn't even know I could speak. So suddenly, boom, it comes in, and I was able to do what they did at the time to put this thing in its place. And I was like,
yeah,
that was so cool. Do you know? So it was such a fun session, and it was, and then she goes home and she starts relearning a new pattern.
Yeah.
She has to start going that all these years she's been told that she's brain injured and that my clonus strictly comes from that. And now we know it doesn't, because I sat there and watched her, filmed her. And I went, look at this. And she was like, oh, my gosh, you know, not a peep out of her body. She wasn't budging at all. So, you know, then somebody has to reinvent their version of reality. It's like when I died, you know, the whole near-death experience and going and sitting in that review and, you know, and seeing how time actually works and then coming back in, I had to go and do some homework on myself, because I had to kind of unlearn everything that I thought was real. And so in doing that, the more I've done that, you know, the easier it makes my experience when I'm doing this kind of stuff with people. And I'm going, look, you simply just have to go. It's like, it's like if cancer was coming from a particular event or you know, where somebody dropped the ball and let themselves down, and the disease needed to bring their attention back into themselves. And they go, oh, my gosh, I didn't even know I could do that. And I'm like, yeah, now you need to go undo that. Oh, okay. So, yeah. That's kind of the efficacy of being able to look into a past life. And this one was just so much fun, because there was just so much involved, like hissing demons. Oh my God, how cool is that? And then I got to go back and look up an entire civilization that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah. And I mean, I had the situation many years ago where, somebody I knew started speaking in a tongue like that, and later had no idea that it had actually happened. And whether it was past life encroaching, who knows? It was a pretty remarkable situation when it happened. But when that does happen, how do you start, I guess, refocusing somebody? Once they
refocus myself first.
Because, well, sure.
Because, you know, I'm such a little comedian. Like, I just think I'm hilarious, and all of life is funny to me.
Yeah.
And so I first have to sit with this and go, oh God, okay, this is funny. You know, it's like, and I'm like, are you for real? I'm like, will I go get my white collar and my cross? You know, and I'm talking to it the same way I'd talk to somebody who is acting an idiot in front of me. You know, I would be like, okay, really? Okay. Is there something you need to say to me? Or are we just going to do this? What's happening here? And, you know, while the other person's, I've seen people levitate. I have seen, you wouldn't believe what I've seen over the years. And so at first I have to kind of just, I start giggling and I'm just laughing going, this is hilarious, because like, you know, here you've got Mr. Three-Piece Suit with the Wall Street Journal tucked under his arm, doesn't even realize this part of the world exists. And then you've got, you know, the housewife who goes and, you know, she's in mass every Sunday and all, she doesn't even know this world exists. And,
well, I was going to say, how do you even begin to conquer that hurdle with somebody of here's what's happening? You've got to have something in pocket, you know. I'm sure that every cancer doctor starts off with the same few sentences, you know. Where it goes from there, who knows?
Right. Well, it is. That's kind of the fun bit. It's like when I had breast cancer and years ago, and it was at a time, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. My children's father had gone, and I was raising the girls from ages 1 to 3 and 3 by myself, and with no help externally. And about 5 years into him being gone, I get this phone call, and he wants to take the children to Disney World. And I'm like, I am working my tail off, and I am doing this. If anyone's taking them to Disney World, it's me. And so, and then the healer voice came in, and I'm like, oh my gosh, listen to yourself. That's not very healer-esque. Don't you want to give the children the opportunity to have this bond with their father and to let everybody heal? And so that voice won. So off they go. And two weeks later, I had cancer. So do you think that's a coincidence? No, it's because I wasn't ready. I was doing that because it looked good. You know, that's my reputation. I'm the author and the healer who writes about being loving and healing these situations and all that. But I wasn't ready for that. And to be quite honest, you know, I had every justification in that space to go, hold on a second. I'm raising the children here. And if we're going to take them to the magical, mystical, you know, wonderful world of Disney, I think I'd like that privilege since I'm the one who's keeping them afloat. Sure. But I overrode that. And so in overriding that voice, nobody puts baby in the corner. I put baby in the corner. I put myself in the corner and went, hey, I'm not listening to me. And so I was just a little too raw to do something so moving. And so next, you know, 2 weeks later, I've got cancer. And so I was like, oh my God, this is what I'm teaching people not to do all the time. And I did it to myself.
Wow.
But, hey, I'm here having a human experience. And so I go in, oncologist is like, you know what, if we start on the key, and I went, don't say the word. If we use Ray, nope. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I know exactly how this happened because I did not have cancer the last check. And now suddenly I do. And there was quite an event that took place in that. And I think that that is the baseline of what's going on. And she's going, I don't think this is smart. And I went, what do you mean? She goes, yeah, okay, with your spiritual stuff and all this kind of, and I'm like, so you don't think that my experience and interaction with the world has anything to do with my physical health? And she was like, I said, here you go. Let's do it my way first. Give me a month. And if I haven't gotten rid of this cancer within a month, based on my understanding of why I have it, then we'll go your route. Fair enough. Okay. She goes, it's not going to kill you in a month. That's okay. So off I go and I sit down by the ocean and I cry, and I don't cry because I have cancer. I cried because they're like, you idiot, you know better than this. So I let myself beat myself up a little, and then I pulled my socks up and I went, all right, now what are we going to do? So I changed up my diet. I went raw. I did SEAC tea. And I healed the fact. And I said, you know what? And I explained to the girl's father, and whether he got it or not wasn't the point. It was that I said, you know, I did a great disservice here and I don't want to carry this resentment anymore. I said, you know, the reality of it is you don't have anything to do with the children, and you came in and you took them away to somewhere that's, you know, magical and wonderful, and I let you. And because of that, I made myself sick. And instead of going, you know what, no, you can't do that because it wouldn't look good, I ended up internalizing and got cancer. And so I just needed to address that. And that's it. It's not a blame thing. It's just, I'm letting you know, this is what happened. And here's where I need to take responsibility for that. And so I go back, and 4 weeks later, she looks and she's like, remarkable. I said, yeah. So I assume I've got no cancer. And she was like, I can't even believe this. Cause it was a 4-centimeter tumor. And she was like, this is unreal. And so I said to her, and this was such a moment, and I went, would you like for me to share with you what I did? And she said, no. And in that moment, I realized, you know, I'm in my world working with the people who are where I am and need what I have to offer. And equally as important, there are people who are in her world and need what she has to offer. And had I explained to her how easy it was to get rid of that cancer, her entire education, everything her foundation is built upon would have unraveled right in front of her. And so that's why I don't ever go, you know, that practitioner is stupid. They don't know what they're doing. That's what are they? They're being evil or bad. Look, people have the choice to utilize these people or not. And so thank goodness that those people are there for the people who feel like that's their path.
Yeah.
And there are people who come into me for healing who I'll go, you know what? You need to go do chemo. And they're like, I thought you were all natural. I said, no. I said, this is about a knowing. This is about an understanding where you are. I don't think that your faith and your trust in your own healing capacity has evolved to a space that you can do it that way. So I think you need some help. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's not what I was expecting. That's what healing is. Healing is not feeding your ego and going, I'm the one who got rid of this. It's meeting the person where they are and meeting their need. And so it's like that with the whole past life thing. It was like, when I was able, thank God for the, you know, smartphones now, because I actually got to turn around. And this is one of those great spots where technology really comes in handy, because I click, and I was recording this, and she just went, oh my gosh, that thing's talking out of my mouth, but that's not me. Yeah. How cool is that? She's like, I can't say I don't believe it, because there it is right in front of me. And then their paradigm shifts. And so that's what we do as healers. You know, we meet people where they are. It's not trying to convince people to be something different, or you don't realize this world is so many different things. This is the definition of what a parallel reality is. It's not a chronological past, present, and future life. They're all happening simultaneously. So you don't berate someone because they're in a different storyline than you. And nor, you know, in my situation, yeah, I don't allow myself to be berated for being in a different storyline than other people. I invite them not to be part of my life if my life doesn't gel with where they are, you know? And so I sit and watch myself as one of the only practitioners who was open during the COVID pandemic, because I was just, how did you do that? How, with everybody else was shut down all of it, because that's not the storyline I was operating in. I was operating in a storyline where the police wanted me to be open because they all come to me, and the ambulance driver saw me as, oh my God, you're totally necessary, you know, essential worker, because yeah. I can't move unless you're there working on me. And so I created my own storyline. I was working. I had my own best pandemic ever because I was working in my storyline and not someone else's. And this is one of the most empowering tools that people can realize. You don't, just because there's an allopathic world and, you know, people can recognize, listen, why do you think you carry insurance? Because it's an allopathic model. So the current reality that a lot of people work in is an allopathic one. Well, you know, you can't have time off work unless you have a doctor cert. Well, how about my acupuncturist, or how about my chiropractor, or how about my Reiki practitioner? I'll just get a cert from them. Sorry, no, we don't take that. Oh, so you only take a cert from a medical doctor. Well, people need to start thinking about that. You know, who's funding that? Who's running that? Who's calling those shots?
Yeah.
But that's become the norm. And so during the pandemic, when all that started unfolding, I was just like, no, that's not my storyline. I'm not certainly going to jump into that out of fear. You know, I'm just going to carry on doing life, doing me. And it worked, and I worked the whole way through, and I was doing healing sessions, and people were coming to me from all over the place the same way they always had. So my life didn't change at all. In fact, I got busier because I was the only one open.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is that idea of a past life, a present life, a future life. The energy, you can't, you know, these are all simply chemical reactions, man. Do you know, you cannot go into the past or even think of the past or interact with the past unless a chemical process takes place in the brain, you know, and you fire up these neurons and you travel down these neural pathways that take you back to a cellular memory. You can't live in anticipation or fear unless you fire up those neurons, travel down that neural pathway, and you move into the future. We're not scared of the past. We're scared of what we deem as the future or present time. And they're literally just chemical reactions. The same way that I could sit and have a memory of what I ate for lunch today. I'm not still eating that. That's over. It's gone. That's history. But the process is still taking place in my body. My body's still breaking it down. It's still present time in my body. But the actual act of eating the lunch has already happened, been there, done that. And so people don't realize and they forget that it's not chronological. It's simultaneous. It's concurrent. And so this is part of the beauty of working with past life scenarios in the healing process, because not only is it opening up something interesting for the person, but it's opening up an entirely new way of looking at the world around them. And that's equally as healing.
Well, and how does the average person begin to recognize that one of these concurrent lives may be interfering with their daily life or with the life of a loved one?
Because they can't get the answers they need through the old model. So this is what happens. A lot of people will go, this doesn't make sense. Medical doctor says they don't understand why this is happening. Well, maybe it's not a medical issue. Did you ever think about that? Oh, yeah. No, I guess I never did. Well, here, let me show you that this world. Let me explain this to you. And they're like, oh, okay. And so it becomes this natural progression, because in the model that they are accustomed to, I always talk about coffee filters. You know, it's like you're trying to make this cup of coffee and, you know, you've got all these different types of filters that you can make that coffee through, or you can have a big dirty filter and get a big dirty cup of coffee, or you can have a clean filter and have this gorgeous clean cup of coffee. And so it all depends on what filter people are taking the experience through.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's once people have dealt with something where the stock standard tried and true method is just not working for them, and that becomes a personal experience, they are far more open to exploring other realities.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and sadly, that frequently comes, especially in some of the cases that you're talking about, even in your own case, at the last moment, when you may not be expecting it, when you may not even be looking for it. So to be able to once again see that ahead of time, to be able to identify that, hey, you know, maybe something else may be going on, even with a family member. Because that's an odd conversation to broach and not an easy one.
Well, it is, because, you know, it is strange, because like I have many experiences. Like I had someone in for healing once who had come from a great distance, and he was all for it. He was so ready to do this, and he knew that he could heal this cancer himself. He just knew it, even though it was not the way people saw him. They didn't realize he was kind of a closet woo-woo guy. And he was like, I know I can do this. So he came for his first session. He absolutely was just like, yes, this feels good. This feels right. The next time I saw him, he looked ghastly, and he came into me and he was in tears.
Oh, man.
And his wife was an oncology nurse. And he said, I just need to say this out loud to someone who can understand. And I went, fire away. And he said, I know I can do this myself, but she's my wife. She was my chosen partner this lifetime. And to live with her without whatever remaining months, weeks I have, and not be doing this the way that is her chosen method, will make my last days more miserable than I could ever imagine. Oh my God. And but that's life, guys. You know, that's what happens. And so he made that choice that she was going to be in pure agony and living with, if only he had done this. He knew he was going to die because he knew he had already made that choice to do it this way. But she was going to go, you know, he could have made it. He could have made it. She would have always lived with this thing of, if only he had done it my way.
Yeah.
And if, so he yeah, just if went, only you he know had what?
Listened. If only he had listened.
Yeah. And he knew how he felt after doing it his way. But the nature of their story together was such that he made a decision that he would rather do that for her.
Yeah.
Then do it for him.
Well, knowing the outcome regardless, she is the one left behind. She is the one left to carry on, at least here in her adjunct lifetime. So,
mm-hmm. Well, he didn't want to listen to her. He didn't want to carry on with his choice, what he was doing, and then have to listen to her.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Well,
hey, remember, there is something
in this country.
Even any white coat doctor will tell you, there is something to be said of the remaining time, of the quality of time that is remaining with somebody in that situation, and what you're going to do with it, and how
tell you how many people have come into me. Whose family, let's say a family member brought them because I'm the healer, you know, and, you know, please help my husband or help my wife or whatever. And then I'll get that person behind closed doors and they will look at me and go, whatever it is you need to do to make them think that I'm doing that, I'm out of here. I'm done.
Yeah. If you have some sage spray or whatever that you need to,
whatever it is that they think, you know, well, it just didn't work or whatever. And they will clearly go, I don't want to get better, because getting better means staying in this particular scenario. Mm. And I'm not in a position in this lifetime with the resources available to me to do this differently. And I'm like, I hear you. I get it. Yeah. That happens a lot. Wow. A lot. Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. So it's fascinating.
And, you know, even with that in mind, you know, the idea of, people coming to you with family members, because once again, it's kind of like, I guess you could roll the dice on an intervention with mm-hmm. somebody. Mm-hmm. But it's still ultimately up to them.
Right.
You know, and they have to be the one to want to make that happen. And that's hard. It's not easy.
It is. Well, it's also quite common. I mean, like, it's so common for people to go and hijack someone else's death. Like, we see it a lot. And it's like, you know, I'm sorry, this is their death. This isn't about you.
Yeah.
You know, you need to process and you need to go, hey, how can I assist you at this time? Not, oh my God, look what you're doing to me.
Yeah, yeah, no. Like, you fortunately have all these great stages that you get to go through.
Right.
They're in that last one right now. Mm-hmm. And they need to get to a point of acceptance. And that's going to be really hard to do if...
with you hanging over them, screaming, don't leave me, don't leave me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be hard, you know, because... there's one thing to understanding the trauma of a past life encroaching on your present life. There's something else to understanding the trauma of... a concurrent life leaving you.
Well, let me leave you with this story.
Please.
This is, you know, I do this for a living. Like, and I would consider myself pretty adept at the skill and like, but we're all having a human experience. We're all having a human experience. And so we're all prone to, it's like, you know, oh, I got cancer for a couple of weeks because I dropped the ball and I did something that was not in my own best interest. You know, okay. So I fixed it. So I corrected it. When my father was dying, this was in 2012, we had a couple of really remarkable experiences. And one of those was when he was in the nursing home, he had Alzheimer's. And he was really having a bad experience with Sundowner syndrome, which is when they're just violent, they're angry, they're shuffling around, pulling the pants down. You know, my father was a brilliant orator. He was a minister. He was a football coach and just a fabulous speaker. And he just lost that ability. He hadn't spoken in months. And I mean, not a word. And he just couldn't, like, he'd open his mouth and just garble would come out. And so we were at the end of a particularly difficult day with him. He'd, you know, punched me in the stomach. He'd, like, I mean, he would never have hurt me in real life. You know, that was just that was an altered state that he was in. And so it was just sad to watch. We were tired. My mother and I were sitting in the room and my dad had been shuffling around and doing all this. And he would not get down in the bed. He would not lie down in the bed because imagine after all these years of being a minister and explaining to people what happens and not, you know, to put their faith and trust in the Lord. And then now he got to death and he was terrified, terrified. And he thought in his mind that if he laid down, that was him dead and it was not going to be pretty. So, he's agitated and all. And all of a sudden he walks over to the bed and he sits down and then he lies back in the bed. And my mother is like looking at me going, what in the world is going on? And he's back and he's reaching for the ceiling and he's like, I can see it. And we're like, what? Because he hasn't talked in months. And I was like, hey dad, what can you see? And it was like for that moment I had dad back and he was like, the land beyond the river, sugar, and it is more beautiful than anything you ever wrote about. And I'm like, hey, Dad. And I was like, well, tell me, what do you see? And he goes, I see Mama. And I was like, oh, wow. And he goes, she looks so young. My mother is like a deer in headlights looking at me going, oh, my gosh, is he dying? And I was like, mm-mm, because the fireworks, because that's what it looks like, guys. When a soul is exiting a body, it's not like a dimmer switch going down. It's quite the opposite. It looks like a fireworks display. And I'm going, no, Mom, he's not dying. He's having an experience right now. Something's happening. And so he's like, oh, Mom, there's Mom. And she looks so beautiful. And so next thing, he's the one who looks like the deer in headlights. And he was like, oh, my gosh. And I said, what? And he goes, Daddy. And I went, what's up? And he goes, Daddy's there. Now, this was such a big deal because my father was extremely straight-laced. He decided to live a life of discipline. And so, you know, he was disciplined for his football players in his church. You know, he never drank, he never smoked, he never swore. He ate well. He was, you know, he just did all the stuff. And it wasn't easy. But his father hadn't been that guy. So by my dad's coffee filter, by my father's criteria of what gets one into heaven, my grandfather hadn't cut the mustard. And this had always bothered my father. So here he is in this state. He's now seeing the land beyond the river. And there's his dad. And he's like, what is happening? And he turns to my mom. And as clear as day, he goes, Helen, I've had it wrong all along. And I mean, speaking just like that, and like, this is out of nowhere. And
wow,
he goes, I've had it wrong all along. He goes, everybody's welcome here. You can't mess this thing up. And my mom leans over to me, you know, and sure, her eyes are like full of tears and all that. She's like, write that down. And which, so I did. And of course, it ended up in a book. But it was so, it was such an amazing moment that my father had that experience. Well, fast forward a little bit to where we're at the time of his actual death. And I had now made 17 trips home in a year from Ireland. I was using up all my savings just to I, the healer, was there and I was going to escort my father through. And it's the same way that you know, someone can be holding vigil by someone's deathbed and then they go for a cup of coffee and the person dies. Because you ain't supposed to be there, guys. Yeah. You know, like it's like if you're there when the person dies, that's because they want you there. If you're not there and you just slipped out for a shower and they died, they couldn't die the way they needed to with you present. And that's not because you're not special. It might be because you're so special that they might find it difficult to release the attachment. So they took the opportunity when you went to the bathroom. Yeah. And so we have to bear that in mind. And that's what I'm talking about when somebody hijacks someone's death. And here was me, the queen of understanding and teaching it. I was doing the same thing. I'm sitting next to my father's bed because I'm sure there's going to be some profound moment that I don't want to miss. And I end up coming home really late from the nursing home. And I got into bed. My mother was already asleep. And next thing, I awaken and I am screaming. And my mother comes running into my room and she's like, flicks the light on and I am sweating. I am freaking out. And she's like, what's going on? And I just went, I can't talk about it right now. I can't talk about it. And she was like, okay. You know, and so she ends up going back to bed. And I mean, 5 minutes later, same thing happened again. And I was just like, not now, not now, not now. So the next morning she gets up and she was like, can you tell me what happened? And I went, yeah. And she goes, and I said, I had this. It was not a dream. It was a vision. It was a memory. And it was a good 10,000 years ago. And there was a warrior, a Celtic warrior, huge, big head of dark, like raven dark hair, full of straw and mud and matted. And he was rolling around on the ground wounded. And he had this horrible festering wound beneath the knee where he had been injured in battle. And I was looking up my body and I could see the leather thongs on my feet. I could see a tartan worn on my body and I could see my legs and I was his beloved. And I am looking at the man writhing around on the ground and I'm wailing because he's dying. And up this big hand goes and he looks at me. And when he rolls over, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my father in this lifetime. And he turns to me and he says, leave me, woman. This is my death alone. And I shoot up and I was like, oh my gosh. And so I'm telling my mother this and she goes, she goes, oh my gosh, it's you. You're the one holding him back. And I went, yes. And she's like, you got to get out of here. And I went, I know. So I literally go and book my flight back. And she's like, look, I'm going into the nursing home later. Come in and, you know, and see me and let me know what's going on. So I arrived in the nursing home later that afternoon. And my father is just, you know, he's really present in his dying process. And she like waves me into the room. Well, one of the things that was my father's most treasured thing was a birthmark. And the birthmark was called the black knee. My dad, my great grandparents, seven times removed would have been a fella called Rob Roy McGregor and his wife, Mary Helen. And they're buried in a place in Scotland called Balquhidder. And so I would be their granddaughter six, seven times down the track. Well, Rob Roy had what was called the black knee. And so my father and many of the males down that line had that black knee. And it was a big birthmark under the right knee. So my mom calls me into the room and she was like, you know what you told me this morning about this, you know, that kind of Celtic Scottish looking warrior and you thought it was dad. And I said, yeah. And she goes, go pull the blanket down off your dad. And I was like, what? She goes, just go pull the blanket off. And I kid you not, this birthmark that had been there his whole life was gone. She's like, you got to get out of here. And I went, I've got to get out of here. So I was on the next plane out, right? So I'm flying back to Ireland and I'm like, this is insane. And I get home, I take my clothes out of my suitcase, I put them in the washing machine and start repacking my bag. I sit up all night and I was sitting out watching because this was in August. And so, you know, the nights are very, very long here in Ireland in the summer. And so I was sitting out on the wall and the sun's coming up at like 3:30 in the morning. You know, it's crazy. And I felt the whoosh. And I knew my father had just died. And so I grab my bag, I head back to the airport and I get on a plane. He could not go with me sitting there because we had the energy or the vestigium, as Zaranovich says, of this past life that was holding us back. Yeah. And only until in the vision of that, where he said, this is my death, did I realize, oh my gosh, I'm doing the very thing that I try to get other people not to do, which is hijack someone else's experience. Yeah. My father and I were very close and he couldn't leave me. He had already, when my mother, 2 weeks earlier, when my mother would start to walk into the room in the nursing home, he'd put his hand up. Don't come in here. Because he was, I mean, they would have been 72 years married this year. Mm. They were just madly in love. And he couldn't have her near him all the time because it's just like he couldn't let go. So then I come in, you know, I'm the kid, you know, my birth was so unusual and I was supposed to have been completely damaged or not survived the birth at all because my mother was 42 with the German measles. And my father has this visit from these, what he called celestial beings. And so I was what he called promised. And that was always our thing. So we had an extraordinarily tight bond because of it. But the idea of leaving me behind and with me sitting there hanging over him because I'm looking for some spiritual experience that I can stick in a book, you know.
Sure.
And I just realized, oh my gosh, look what you're doing. And I got out of there. And the second I was able to get out of the country, the man was able to pass in peace.
Wow.
So
wow.
That's another great example of how a past life can be informative, you know, and create not just a healing, but create the space for a peaceful passing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that is one of the things that people really forget that's what compassion means.
Yes.
Is to suffer alongside, not to get in the way of it, to allow it to happen.
That's it.
Cause it has to happen.
Exactly.
But to suffer alongside somebody. Mm-hmm. And to be there. And that's why, you know, visiting the ill and being there at the time of passing is like one of the corporal works of mercy in the mm-hmm. eyes of the church, because it is a sacred moment. And once again, being able to be there and understand that, and even understanding that now for you, Mary, must be very, very forgiving for yourself and very,
oh, absolutely.
Very healing.
Yeah. And it's a very personal experience that I can turn around to say to anybody, look, doesn't matter how much we know. Look, Michelangelo was a brilliant artist, but what was his most famous line? I'm still learning.
Yeah.
And so if we can remember that and we can get out of our own ways and we can, you know, move on, forgive ourselves, move forward, and adopt new ways of thinking that aren't necessarily so, I mean, the boxes are there for a reason. I'm not a person who thinks, you know, that you're so great because you're out of a box. The boxes are there just so you can move to a different box when you've used up, learned, grown from, and taken everything that the box that you just left had to offer. Yeah. And so, you know, it's not some kind of hierarchy. It's just whatever, wherever you are in your progression, that maybe these kind of stories or, that's why we utilize frequency to put people in a state.
Yeah.
A frequency will change someone's state where they might be more open to receiving grace. And, you know, grace is something, it's something that has no explanation, and it's not something that you're necessarily deserving of or have earned, but it comes to you just because. And, you know, grace is an opportunity. And so we each have opportunities to exercise grace, for, you know, with ourselves and with other people.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Mary, I want to thank you so much for your time. It's always so great whenever we have you on. I always feel so energized after our conversations.
I appreciate you so much and everything you're doing.
I appreciate your time, especially right after a busy day of healing and working with folks. We've been popping it up on screen, but of course, let everybody know where they can go to visit you, where they can go to ask questions, where they can go to get a hold of you for sessions, Mary.
I'm not at the moment because I've got so many on backlog. You're welcome. Visit my website, maryhelenhensley.com, but don't take it personally if you email, and I'm so overwhelmed. That's why I'm creating that show that I'm doing is to try to answer some of the questions. In this lifetime, I couldn't begin to hit the backlog of sessions. And, you know, that's the beauty of social media as well. You go on a podcast and 3 million people hear you, and then all of a sudden, who wouldn't want to look for something that might be of help to themselves or to a family member? But, you know, I'm just one person. So, you know, I'm doing the very best that I can, and I'm trying to find new ways to be able to, that's why signs, is such a big deal. And remember that, folks, signs, SINES.app. Yep. That's why it's such a huge thing, because it is putting the tools into your hands where you can create your own miracles.
Absolutely. Well, once again, thank you so much for your time. Please do hold the line while we close things out.
Thank you.
Mary, while you are online checking out everything from Dr. Mary Helen Hensley, as well as Signs, signs.app is where you can go to check that out. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, folks. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us. That's where you can tune in every week on our live app. That's where you can go to the store, buy not only our merch, but books from all of our guests, like Dr. Mary Helen Hensley. That's where you can go and share your story on our experiencer page. If you're an experiencer of the paranormal, if you've had a cryptid sighting, if you are a UFO witness, if you're a government whistleblower, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. Thank you so much once again, everybody, for tuning in. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.